Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, May 21st, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Boise High School Sexuality and Gender Student Group drops a lawsuit against Idaho's new anti-trans bathroom bill after teen member of the group commits suicide. FBI agent testifies in Trump's felony conspiracy trial against June 11th ICE protesters in Spokane. And turnout in primary in the city of Moscow, 35%. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report.
This is Soul Seed, and you're listening to KRFP Moscow.
And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Boise High School Sexuality and Gender Alliance has dropped their lawsuit against the state of Idaho over its transgender bathroom law, which is set to take effect July 1st after a member of the group committed suicide and another student who was involved in the group stopped attending school. Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador praised the dismissal of the case in a statement today. Labrador said, "From the district court to the Ninth Circuit, we defended Idaho's right to protect students' privacy in bathrooms and locker rooms. Idaho families can be confident that this law is fully in effect and will remain so." Labrador is jumping the gun, as the law does not take effect until July 1st, and there could be another legal challenge before that date. Critics say the law seeks to make Idaho's transgender citizens invisible. A major police union in Idaho, the Fraternal Order of the Police, argued against the law as it was going through the legislature because they are aware that in order to enforce the law, they would likely have to inspect people's genitals for evidence. The Idaho Capital Sun reported when asked about the Boise High student suicide, Attorney General Labrador responded today saying, "This is a personal tragedy and our hearts go out to the family. We don't comment on the private circumstances of individuals involved in litigation." After Governor Brad Little signed the law in early April, Mindy Van Horn, a founding member of Chroma LVC, a nonprofit that works year-round to support, advocate for, and create safe spaces for the LGBTQ plus community across the Lewiston Valley, said, "A woman who's dressed in more masculine clothing with short hair going into a female restroom can be questioned. I don't think there's anything in this bill that is dealing with that." Reports by the National Policing Institute, a nonpartisan independent nonprofit organization, researched sexual assault cases in public bathrooms where existing laws protected transgender persons using a bathroom of their gender choice, but found no evidence of sexual assaults taking place in which men, under the guise of being women or transgender, entered women's bathrooms to commit a sexual assault. The myth that that was a problem was brought up in legislative debate over the bill. However, the National Center for Transgender Equality reported a survey in 2025 found 12% of transgender people reported being verbally harassed, physically attacked, or sexually assaulted when accessing or using a restroom in the past year. TransAffirm, which is a nonprofit dedicated to supporting transgender diverse individuals across Idaho, is compiling a list of safe bathrooms for gender persons in Idaho. The King County Prosecutor's Office charged Christopher Levy of Bellevue with premeditated murder Monday in the killing of 19-year-old University of Washington transgender student Juniper Blessing. A tenant in an off-campus apartment building found Blessing's body in the laundry room on Sunday, May 10th. The 31-year-old Leahy has not entered a plea yet, noting Leahy allegedly stabbed Blessing over 40 times. The county prosecutor wrote there was, quote, uncontrolled rage evidenced by horrific injuries he inflicted on Juniper Blessing. The charging document says Leahy, quote, stalked another UW student across a multi-building apartment complex, eventually following this second student into the same building and same room where he would viciously murder Juniper Blessing. Tracking apps and video recordings have placed the defendant in campus buildings and attempting to enter private homes in Ravenna prior to the murder and back near the murder scene 2 days after the murder. Police recovered video of Leahy on the laundry room surveillance camera and published still images of him on May 13th. According to the Stranger website, those images led Leahy's brother to turn him in. Leahy surrendered to Bellevue police the evening of May 13th with the help of an attorney and accompanied by his parents. Police also say they have found Leahy's fingerprints at the murder scene. A judge set bail at $10 million because he said Leahy poses a danger to the community and is a flight risk. One of the defense attorneys at the Spokane 3 trial in Spokane said the government's story that there was an agreement to impede or injure law enforcement officers at the June 11th protest at an ICE facility in Spokane is false. Defense attorney Amy Rubin, who is representing Bajan Mavalwala II, Jack Archer, and Justice Forrell, said in her opening statement, "It's not about whether every decision that day was wise. You may conclude it was loud, tense, chaotic, but this courtroom is not the place to punish protesters' frustration or emotion. The government chose to charge this as a criminal agreement. And one thing will remain missing from the government's story, an agreement." Local police arrested 34 people at the protest at an ICE detention facility near downtown Spokane last June 11th, and charges were dropped against most of them. Then came the arrests of the Spokane 9 by the FBI and U.S. Marshals Service in July. Those arrests came days after Trump installed another acting U.S. attorney for Eastern Washington, after acting U.S. attorney Richard Barker resigned, alluding to pressure from the Trump administration for felony prosecutions of ICE protesters. Six of the Spokane 9, including former Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert, who put out the call on social media to block ICE vehicles, took plea deals last year. The three remaining defendants are Mavalwala, longtime community activist Justice Forrell, and Gonzaga Law School alum Jack Archer. Archer had experience managing protests for the Spokane Community Against Racism group. According to an account in the Spokesman Review, attorneys for both sides chose a jury of 8 women and 6 men Monday, and on Tuesday, attorneys began presenting evidence. The case is unusual because most of the events of the day were captured on video, either from police drones or from reporters on the ground. Assistant U.S. Attorney Rebecca Perez showed a video of Farrell parking a car in front of a transport bus. Perez said Archer had posted on Facebook that day, "People should come down now because they needed more bodies and people were risking arrest." She said Archer walked around with a clipboard and megaphone to organize protesters. Perez showed video of Mavalwala standing in front of ICE agents' cars, preventing them from leaving a fenced-in area at the Cataldo Street ICE facility. Government video appeared to show Forrell blocking a gate to the fenced parking area with park benches. Other footage appears to show Forrell deflating tires on an ICE bus parked in front of the facility. Perez said, "They were organized, they worked together to block exits, and because of the force of threats and intimidation used, police were forced to use force in return." FBI agent Ethan Hawks, who was the government's first witness, said he recovered messages on Mavalwala's confiscated phone that showed he was on Reddit discussing the protest with others. Under cross-examination from defense attorney Aini Ahmed, Hawks said no when asked if Mavalwala had discussed anything illegal on Reddit. Hawks said he did see Mavalwala on the video he reviewed kicking a deployed smoke canister in the direction of police. Ahmed said Mavawala may have been far enough away from police at the time that he could have been kicking the canister away from himself rather than at police. Ahmed showed multiple witness videos of protesters scuffling with ICE agents at the south gate of the parking lot at the ICE building. The Spokesman Review reported people in the gallery gasped and jurors had shocked looks on their faces when Ahmed showed a masked ICE agent grabbing a person by the neck and shoving their head to the ground. Hawks said agents had to use force to get people away from the exit gate, and if the crowd had moved out of the way, there would have been no reason to use force. Archer's attorney Andrew Wagley showed a video of an ICE agent apparently pushing Archer to the ground. Hawks said it appears that Archer falls down. A woman on the jury voiced doubt by saying, "Falls?" loud enough for people in the courtroom to hear. The trial, which started Monday, is expected to last 2 weeks. ICE agents on the scene and multiple city and county police officers are expected to testify this week. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Latah County Auditor Julie Fry reports turnout in the city of Moscow for Tuesday's primaries was 35%. That's higher than the city's 29% turnout in the 2022 primaries. Turnout is measured by the percentage of registered voters who actually cast ballots. According to the Daily News, Fry said she thought voter turnout numbers would be higher because of the amount of money candidates and PACs spent this year. Fry said Tuesday's city turnout was lower than Moscow's November election turnout for city council and mayor races. About 1,000 more voters in the city cast ballots in the November election. Election workers reported turnout was slow at precincts 1, 8, 13 and 16 and 18 at the Bruce Pittman Center at the University of Idaho campus. During the 2024 presidential election, people waited for hours after the polls closed at the university polling station, which was then at the Recreation Center. Poll worker Connie Brum told the Daily News, "It's way more cyclical in this location. Of course, right now, the students aren't even in town. The ones that are voting, most of them are voting at home or have voted early and have gone away." During a county commission meeting last month, area residents expressed concerns about poll workers' 14-hour shifts and possible confusion over a change in the early voting location, which were previously held at the Latah County Courthouse. Fry decided the courthouse location was too small, so officials moved the early voting location to the Latah County Fairgrounds. Fry said many voters waited until Election Day to drop off absentee ballots Tuesday. She said on Tuesday, "Absentees have been slow, but today we're getting hammered." Fry said none of the polling stations had delays, and all worker stations were filled. The Pullman Moscow Regional Airport will receive a $350,000 federal grant for an upgrade to revitalize its taxiway. The airport is one of seven airports across the state who received grant money from the 2021 federal infrastructure law. U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell, who is the ranking member of the U.S. Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, said the Pullman Moscow Airport is getting a portion of the $82 million grant for seven airports in Washington from the Airport Improvement Program included in the 2021 federal infrastructure law. Cantwell said Pullman Moscow Regional Airport keeps the Palouse connected to the rest of the country, and upgrading pavement markings is one of the most cost-efficient safety investments an airport can make. Eastern Washington winters wear down runways and taxiways quickly. This project will help ensure reflective markings are in place to help pilots fly in low visibility conditions.
Oregon's latest permit regulating waste from factory farms fails to adequately protect Oregonians from harmful pollution, according to local environmental groups. Eastern Oregon has been experiencing nitrate groundwater contamination for decades, and concentrated animal feeding operations are a known contributor. Tara Heinzen with Food and Water Watch says the permit issued by the Oregon Departments of Agriculture and Environmental Quality is an important opportunity for the state to address the problem at the source.
Unfortunately, the renewed permit is more of the same. We're particularly disappointed that despite all of the attention that this nitrate contamination issue has received, that this permit does not meet that challenge.
According to Food and Water Watch analysis, in 2022, Oregon's mega dairies produced the equivalent of two-thirds of the human sewage created by the entire state. Nitrates, which are linked to cancer, thyroid problems, and pregnancy complications, are in the runoff from the waste and have contaminated nearby drinking water supplies. Heinzen says the main issue with the new permit is that it doesn't require farms to monitor the waste they're producing, making it impossible to know if their pollution is illegally reaching waterways. She says monitoring is a linchpin of the Federal Clean Water Act, but factory farms have typically been let off the hook for this requirement.
On paper, there are requirements for this industry to prevent pollution, but in practice, it's almost impossible for us to know if a facility is complying with those requirements, because they don't have to test.
Heinzen says Food and Water Watch is still analyzing the new permit, but there is potential for a legal challenge by environmental advocates or community groups. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Washington Insurance Commissioner Patty Kuderer held a town hall meeting at Medical Lake City Hall yesterday to discuss fire resiliency. The 2023 Gray Fire hit Medical Lake hard, burning 9,500 acres and destroying 240 homes in the Medical Lake area. According to the Spokesman Review, Medical Lake Mayor Terry Cooper spoke about how legislation could assist communities dealing with similar rebuilding problems. Cooper said local governments need to spend a lot of money right after being hit with a wildfire. He said Medical Lake spent $500,000 from a contingency fund in the 6 months after the fire. Cooper said, "We think big disaster, big government, and that's not true. What we found is that you have a big disaster, you're rolling out supplies, you're rolling out resources, you're rolling out help. The minute that disaster happens, you're spending money and you're doing everything that you can to get a community together, getting the resources they need." Kuderer said 32% of the people with significant damage to their homes from the Gray Fire lost their insurance, and two-thirds are currently underinsured. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it will be mostly cloudy tonight, gradually becoming mostly clear with a low around 44. Sunny tomorrow, high 73. Increasing clouds Friday night, low 46. Cloudy through mid-morning Saturday, then gradual clearing, high 77. Partly cloudy Saturday night, low 48. Sunny on Sunday, high 75. Partly cloudy Sunday night, low 48. Monday, Memorial Day, 20% chance of showers in the afternoon. Mostly sunny, high 71. 60% chance of showers Monday night, possibly a thunderstorm before midnight. Mostly cloudy, low 42, and a 30% chance of showers Tuesday, partly sunny, high 58. Currently 66 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Coming up, we have Flashpoints, and that'll be followed at 7:30 with Appearing Locally, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. That goes on to 8, and then at 8 o'clock, Sister Sonics on the air. So stay tuned for that. Have a good night.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, established in 1973. The Moscow Food Co-op is a cooperatively owned grocery store that serves as a community hub and champions healthy, local, inclusive, and sustainable food and goods.